This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
He's covered the big events and talked to the biggest names in sports for more than three decades.
Threes, end zone, he hit it! 500 career touchdown passes!
From Super Bowls to the World Series, he's been there, he'll be there, and he's here now for CMI, the Chris Myers Interview.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you joining us on CMI, the Chris Myers Interview. He's the, well, let's call him America's ref. You see him on NFL games, college games, going back 2010. I can't believe that was the original moment. And now there are a lot of copycats out there. There are a lot of guys doing the same thing for other networks. But Mike Pereira, the NFL and college football rules analyst at Fox, along with Dean Blandino, who has been added, is joining us here now. And Mike, it's good to talk to you. It's always good working with you. How you doing?
Well, it's great working with you. And, you know, we did something different this year. Instead of like having a different crew every weekend, we said, you know, let's, for consistency purposes, let's pick crews, and you stay with crews, the whole season. So there was Burkhart. I already had Buck because I was stuck with that one, but that I chose Myers.
Oh,
I
really?
Myers. Oh, yeah. Right. That was my number one choice.
First round. Well, for people listening who watch NFL, obviously have seen you, whether it's the Thursday night or the doubleheader game or playoffs or Super Bowl. What, just for the role here on a normal Sunday, let's take that, you're watching, even though you picked my game or there's other games for Fox and you're in there back in the studio, you're watching more than one game, right? You're keeping an eye. I think it's almost like the league itself that they're a control center in New York.
Yeah, it very much is like that. And so I am watching multiple games. Usually in the early time slot, it's two. You know, I'm usually watching your game and I'm watching Kenny Albert's game. And I have them set up in a sequence on a master screen. So I basically just have to look up, down, up, down, up, down. And I can follow two games pretty well. And I'm aware of, you know, any situation where I might be called upon. And Dean is doing the same thing on the other side on the other side of the room. Social distancing now. We have to keep apart from each other, which is probably good because we don't like each other anyway. So we're separated there. And you know, two games is not bad. Where it becomes challenging is when there's more than two. And on Saturdays, because we're in there doing college football, now that the Big Ten has started, I mean, I had three games going at once at 9 o'clock last Saturday and three at 12:30. And that becomes a bit of a challenge because, you know, we're not talking directly to you generally, but we're talking to your producer and, you know, feeding him information or he's asking us questions. So it's really kind of chaotic, but it makes the games go by really fast. And if you can do that in college football, if you can make a game seem in your mind to go by fast, man, is that a bonanza.
Well, I want to go back to the NFL, and before we get to the mechanics of how it works at Fox, and I know you talk to a producer, and then if it's big enough or something, we have the time. Again, you come actually on, and people see you talking with us, the on-air guys, about what the ruling is or expounding upon what the rules are. But in New York now, simplify for us the way things are working this year, because replay has come a long way, and I think the league, and you tell me, Mike, they're admitting now openly, hey, we're using replay in New York, and if we need to go there for the final call, we're going to do that.
Yeah, it really, if you go back to when this all happened, it was Dean Blandino's last season there, and he basically worked with the competition committee and the owners to allow the decision to be made in New York. So they would literally have the final say. Yes, they would talk to the referee, but the final say went to New York, and Dean Blandino was going to be the final say. But, you know, then he kind of went from a final say to a final offer, and the final offer was better at Fox than it was at the NFL. So he then came to us, which then put it into the lap of Al Riveron. And so Alberto was the one that was making the final decisions, and he had that along with all the other responsibilities that go with running the officiating program. And now it's changed, and I think changed for the better, because basically the training and development is handled by Walt Anderson, a referee that came off the field. He came in a year before I did. So he came into the NFL in 1995 as an official, and he has all those responsibilities. And Al just sits in the room in the Art McNally Center, and he monitors everything, and he determines if games should be stopped or if they shouldn't be stopped, if it's a scoring play or a change of possession. And then ultimately that decision falls strictly with Al. And he communicates now not only with just the referee, but they have a system now that it includes all seven referees on the field, the replay official, all on the same line, that they can talk back and forth to each other. And you know, the system under Al, I think, and Russell Yerk, by the way, who is his right-hand man, I think it got a bit too technical when they first started out. But now I think they've done a better job. I'm not saying a perfect job, but a better job of trying to be consistent and not overturning things that shouldn't be overturned. But Chris, it's a process. And somebody asked me today, am I happy with instant replay? And my answer after thinking about it for about 15 seconds was no. I'm just kind of tired of it.
Right. But we can't not have it, right? Where we are as a society, if people at home, Mike, could stop their TV and scan it back and see a call that is missed, that's so obvious, right? We've gotten into something that we have to just handle.
Well, you're right, but what we have to be careful of is how far we take it. I mean, and you know, you go back to 1999 when this was first brought back in. There was a one time they tried it in 86 to 91, and it imploded. And so, in 1999, we brought it back, much against the will of George Young, who is just an incredible guy, who was the GM, of course, over all those years with the Giants. And he was the head of football operations, and he had a manila folder in 1999 for instant replay. And instead of on the tab writing instant replay, he wrote in big letters on the front of it, "The monster grows." And you know, he was right, because when we brought it in 1999, it was all based on facts. It was not based on judgment. And here we are now trying to decide in instant replay, what is a football move? Did you have the ball long enough? Of course, and we're talking about a catch or no catch. Did you have it long enough to perform? And, you know, these, to me, judgment decisions shouldn't be made in replay, but we're going further and further and further down that road. And I, for one, don't like it. And so I know we can't go back, but let's just leave it alone, because we're not going to correct everything. That's virtually impossible to correct everything. Okay. So at some point, we have to rely on the human element of the game, whether it's a mistake or not. Everybody makes them, right?
Right.
I mean, players, coaches, you and me, we make them.
Absolutely.
You know, so maybe I'd love to have replay, matter of fact.
Yes, but no, so all right, so we don't want to grow the monster, but it's here. And I will say, Mike, just like rules, the simpler, the better. So I think I'm speaking, I guess, for many fans, right? They don't want the game dragged down, slowed down, and something can look so different on replay. And you're right, if you go frame by frame, it can change the result on the field. I guess what fans, and we saw it in that Rams-Saints playoff game, that major moment that was kind of missed, if it's something, and we use clear and obvious, if it's that big a play and it's that obvious. So New York, in our current framework, they can, if somebody misses and doesn't throw a flag, they can buzz down and say, hey, throw a flag on this. We got to look at this. Can that happen?
Well, they only in certain situations. There's only a few penalties that can be created by replay. You can create an illegal touch of a pass. You create 12 men on the field. You can create a quarterback being beyond the line of scrimmage when he releases the ball. Those are basically just the three categories that they can add. Now, they're into, you know, if there is a foul call for illegal use of the helmet, they're into that process in terms of ejection and that kind of stuff. But they're really not there to create fouls. And I don't think they should be, because, you know, I think that officials, when I think of the body of officials, I mean, and this is hard for me to say, and some people don't like to hear it out of my mouth, but I think the body of officials, the 120 some odd guys or whatever it is, I think it's better. That they're better than they've ever been before.
Really?
But I think the officiating is worse. And so I try to look at this and try to figure out why do I think the officiating is not as good as it used to be when the officials are better. But I think what happens with instant replay, it becomes this safety net. And so you got officials sometimes laying off thinking that, you know, replay is going to bail them out. And there's the uncertainty on the field and the hesitancy that you get when you make calls. And I just think that, you know, that the system has protected some people that probably shouldn't be officiating.
That's interesting.
That's kind of the way I've been feeling the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, nobody likes, which is kind of your job. Nobody likes somebody looking over their shoulder constantly correcting them. But you were doing that obviously for television after so many years having worked for the league and in officiating on this subject. Great. Because based on what you just said, I'm curious, the officiating two parts here, Mike, and we're talking with Mike Pereira on the field officiating this year. Give me a grade on that separate. And then grade the replay officiating. Give that a grade this year.
Well, I'm going to say on the field, I'm going to give it a B, and I would consider that a high grade. When I think about average, and I give credit to that to Walt Anderson, who's working in concert with the rest of the people in the NFL, but they've never faced, Chris, what they faced this year. I mean, you know, you can get people on every street corner here in Sacramento that says they say we don't need preseason football. Yeah, they're probably right. Players don't need preseason football, but boy, officials need preseason football. Officiating is so different than playing. It's a mental exercise, not a physical exercise. And if you haven't been on a field for 9 months, it takes time to get back into sync. Well, they didn't have that this year. No preseason football. They didn't go to training camp. They didn't have an in-person clinic, all because of COVID, of course. And so they were so under the gun. And then you take an official who's been officiating for 20 years and, you know, it's hard. There's a lot of pressure. And now all of a sudden you're wearing a mask. You've got an electronic whistle in some cases. They're telling you the social distance on the field when you can. That just was set up to be so difficult. And then you add on the turnover, 11 new officials. So you got 11 new officials that have never worked a regular season NFL football game. And now they're thrust at this new speed and this new pressure. Forget about the fact there's no fans. That doesn't add anything or take away anything. But the pressure on those 11 is insane. I would have freaked out, I think, if it was me and my very first game was, you know, the Rams and the 49ers or something. So I give it a B because I think they have adapted fairly well. And thanks to Walt Anderson and the crew who told them, don't call anything unless it's clear and obvious using replay terminology. Hey, I said the same thing. Make it be there. That's kind of the same thing, but clear and obvious puts a whole, you know, greater emphasis on it. So what we're seeing is less fouls, and actually less fouls creates less news on officiating, and less fouls create more points. And we're seeing that if you take into consideration that, you know, so few holding penalties are being called versus last year, more defensive pass interference penalties, less offensive pass. It all works to more offense and more points, which is what we're seeing. And to me, I don't mind that. And I love the fact that there's less stops for penalties. There's less dead time. I mean, I don't really need to see the Ed Hockley type, you know, description of a foul on the field, which just adds to more dead time. Even though he was a great referee, he got a little wordy from time to time. And in replay, I think replay has been okay. And I have agreed with most things, but to the five of us that are doing this, Blandino and McCauley and Sterator and Perry, we're still confused on what a football move is. And we think they've drawn the line to such now that we're all scratching our heads. And if we're scratching our heads, we're kind of being quiet about it, because if we say kind of what they're saying, we'll throw all of you that are doing the game, we'll throw you all off the edge, because it's just still a bit confusing.
Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with whiteboard, drawing, sharing, and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with large gallery view, you can see more of your team all at once, with up to 49 people on screen all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Well, how would you? We think we all know what a football move. I mean, do you even need a football move? You either caught the ball or you didn't. To forget one step, two step. Did you grasp it? Did you hold it? And that's a catch, right? I mean, it should be
well,
that simple.
But the problem is that this, you know, you have to have this element of time, and the element of time is basically for protection, and you know, for the person that's trying to catch the ball. So You always have this time, that old three-part process. We talk to you about that all the time, all yep. the announcers. It's right. Control, 2 feet, and time. So this time thing, they try to define it. And I think, you know, even though it was anti-Blandino who didn't like it, and I was okay with it, they said if you got control and 2 feet down, and then you got another step, you took a third step, then that would be a football move, whether you're going to the ground or not. That's kind of clear. But then we're into now, in a play that we had, is, you know, tucking the ball in without turning upfield, without just tucking the ball into your body to try to complete the catch. Is that a football move? And they're saying yes. And we're going, you're kidding me. That's how can that be a football move? You're just trying to tuck the ball in so you can basically complete the catch. And so, you know, that's added to us the element of confusion that we, you know, that we get involved with instant replay. And if you want to, by the way, Chris, you want to get Joe Buck's ire, is just talk about the play at the goal line, ruled a touchdown, but it's actually an inch short. And we're sitting there trying to decipher between an inch and 2 inches and the plane of the goal line. That one drives him crazy, because if it wasn't stopped and it ruled a touchdown, nobody would have said a word. But we're into looking into inches versus the obvious mistake. And that's how I think it grows and kind of grows.
Well, no, and that's and in fairness to the officials, if you start adding on to rules or clarification of things, then it is going to become more complex. And how do you think the viewer feels if they saw it one way on Sunday afternoon and then Monday night it's called another way? I some of those things I've always thought, and I asked Roger Goodell about this once before, and I realized how successful the NFL could we have. You know how you have the hockey light when a goal is scored? Is there some mechanism in today's world of technology in a football that you could put so that it automatically, if it breaks the plane, then you get the official scoring there? And I feel the same way with, I love, you know, the chain link for the 10 yards at a first down, but that's another thing, measuring for the first and is the spot accurate? Sometimes those things are very difficult. Isn't there some kind of technical way, or am I confusing things a little bit more here with technology?
Well, I don't think you're confusing them necessarily. And this has been talked about for a long time, and there have been chips now put in football just to monitor certain things, like, you know, the goalposts and field goal attempts, and could they shrink the width of the uprights of the field goal to make it harder, so we're tracking how far the field goals are good or not good. There have been chips in football, but I just don't see how you can do it and solve the issue of the ball breaking the plane, because so often the difficult ones are the ones in the big scrum where it's right. the run up the middle. And unless you put a chip in a knee or a chip in an elbow, because, you know, you could have the light go off, but was the knee down?
Yeah, that's true.
And same way with the line to gain. So that's always bothered me, just because I don't see it. If the light went off and you automatically rule it a touchdown, say, even though you can't see body parts, I just don't think it's practical. And for the line to gain, that's the other, you know, I love to see those old guys running out in the field with the rods and the chain and the drama. Stretch it out. And, hey, make sure you get the umpire lined up on this side so the television camera can get a clear look. That's a fact. That's what they say. They just had it on their training tape.
Right.
The drama of the chains being extended, I think, is wonderful. And those guys that do it, it's been, in many cases, it's been in their families for like three generations of family have done that.
I know that's and of course, you remember the famous Gene Steratore, the theatrics, almost like you with the card and measuring with the chain and the football. And so I love that you guys make it fun. How about, and I don't know if people at home realize that you don't have the same number of cameras. By the way, what was your grade on replay? You gave B for on the field. Are you going C for the replay grade this year?
I'm going to give C, which is status quo.
Standard number of cameras. We have a minimum, which we do have, but placement on every goal line, right? So that you have the same kind of views. No, you can have additional cameras, but there are some basic cameras there that can clearly show from above and from the side, especially when you get to a scoring play on a goal line where things are that critical.
Yeah. And of course, Bill Belichick proposed this many times and he's right. I mean, there's no way we should have to be judging on whether a player stepped out of bounds or not without a camera going directly down the sideline. Because if you look at it from a camera shot within, it actually from inside, it pushes the foot out. And if you look at it from the other side, just because of the camera shot, now all of a sudden the foot looks in. And so it's never really accurate. And to me, in the plays that count most, like the touchdowns, the end line, the sidelines, and the goal lines ought to be all covered, and somebody ought to figure out a way to where all lines are covered right down the line. And to me, that would be good for those big plays we got a camera now on the pylon in many cases. We do even have a camera now on the line to gain marker, so we can get that type of ground level shot, which has helped a couple of times. But to me, down the boundaries and at the goal lines are something that we ought to figure out that can be used, whether they're provided in stadium and can be used by the networks and used by the replay system. To me, that's a must at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting, Mike. Some coaches, when we used to have the TV production meetings where you gather before the game, that they're astute enough that they'll realize, okay, if we're not on, you know, Fox's Thursday night primetime game or Monday night or Sunday night, so there's more cameras, obviously, or there isn't a playoff or a Super Bowl available. So on a routine Sunday afternoon game, early game, let's say, without that many cameras, they'll ask sometimes about where the camera angles are, so that if they want to challenge. And is there does the league have a rule on in-stadium cameras so that the visiting team is getting the same view of things and how they can be shown on a Jumbotron as the home team, so you're on equal footing there?
Well, you're on equal footing. It is what feed that you get into the coach's booth.
Okay.
And that's really what it is. And you don't get any other feed whatsoever. And it's just basically for the coaches, anything that shows on television, you know. And I think a lot of people probably don't realize that, you know, when we have a challenge and when you say, you know, we'll be back after this and we take a break, during that break, you know, you're getting fed. Eric Billigmeier is feeding you all kinds of shots, feeding replay all kinds of shots. That's really why he's doing it. Instead of, you know, sitting back during that minute and a half and having a shrimp like I usually do with the red sauce, you know, he's feeding the replay system all kinds of looks, of which most likely the decision is going to be made based on that. But, you know, the point being of the different amount of cameras, I get. I do get that. You could, you know, you could have what? You could have Super Bowl 30 cameras or whatever, right. And then you could have six at what we call a C game or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe I think it's more 8 or 10, but go ahead.
But it as long as it's equal between both teams that are playing. I'm okay with that. Yeah, you might look at it and say, well, within the division, it might impact win or losing a game within the division, but I'm more into equity between the two teams that are playing. And so the number of cameras doesn't make that big of a difference to me.
And we're talking with Mike Pereira, Fox rules analyst, who's been at it for more than a decade in the TV sense. I mean, you mentioned guys, Gene Steratore, John Perry, Terry McCauley, those that have gone on to TV. And by the way, they're all terrific guys, and they were great to work with, the officials, when I worked down on the field as a reporter. They are very helpful, as helpful as they can be. Within the rules and then growing. So for Mike Pereira, a guy who was kind of, I won't say struggling along, but you were rolling along in the officiating business. And then Fox puts you on television. And I've been out with you a few times, you know, Super Bowl week, or we go out to dinner or something. And you've become, in the last decade here, this TV star. I mean, now they talk about your three-piece suit in primetime. So I think people would get a kick out of, Mike, how that changed your life, you know, being a bit, really, as a ref, you're kind of a guy getting booed a lot, and all of a sudden you're a TV star.
Well, it just doesn't seem right to me, you know, because I would never have thought about something like this. And, you know, I sometimes I get recognized if I'm at an airport and I'm like, really? I mean, you actually, and then, you know, then when I start to get a little bit big headed, then I go on social media and look at my Twitter account, and then I get shot right back down because right. I get busted so bad in social media. But I still, Chris, sometimes just don't know how to act because I was not trained in this business. And so I find myself sometimes like unprepared for an unexpected situation, as happened this past Sunday with you. And, yes. and if you'd have been inside to see this, because we were on, I came on a couple times in your game. And then one time something happened. I forget what the play was, but I said to Eric Billigmeier, the producer, that, yes, I agree with that, that that's a good call. And so then you were just talking, and all of a sudden you said, Mike Pereira. And then you paused for a second, and I had the biggest piece of cornbread in my mouth from my cornbread and barbecued chicken. And Travis, my producer, turned to me, and I like, spit this thing. The cornbread actually flew up because I thought you were going to say, Mike Pereira,
what do you think?
Your thoughts on this? And I was like, and then when you start talking again, like the whole room started laughing, you know, because
that's funny.
I had to get a little paper towel to clean up all the cornbread mess.
It was kind of an unplanned prank. But I would never go to you. We, you know, from the game, from the live broadcast, we would never go to you until you're ready. In fact, a few times can we see in the monitor, you're settling into your chair, you're getting whatever your food out of your mouth, whatever you're doing. Cause the producer's like, not yet. Don't go to Mike yet. Cause you know, we got to get a call on this. We got to get further explanation. So well, I know those things happen.
And you know, it's different. I've been on the road with Troy and Joe for the last 2 years, wherever they were, I was with them. And so I had obviously standing next to Troy, I had, you know, immediate input with them. And then through the COVID issue, when we all decided it was better for me to stay in Los Angeles as opposed to being on the road, some of the booths, as you know, are kind of small, and to third person with all those research people in there. And so Troy and Joe worked it out to where I have this now communication system on their games. So it's just like I'm standing there. So so they can go to me without setting me up and just do it audio right. only. And so many times so far, you know, Troy will just go, Mike Pereira, what do you think about that? And I'm going, you know, you got that. Now, all of a sudden, usually that 20 seconds you have to prepare goes to no time. And you just have to respond. But, you know, hey, listen, I back to the original thing is that I I don't even consider myself talent. I mean, I just am a guy that has some rules knowledge and trying to impart that knowledge to the fans that are watching the game and try to impart it to our announcers too. You know, we do weekly tapes, either Dean or myself, to send out to you guys
every
week. And that's my job. And, you know, it's just amazing to me though, Chris. I mean, 11 years, man, 11 years I've been doing this, which is incredible. And when I thought back in the year 2010 that I was basically retiring, and then when Fox came up with this gig, and I thought, well, I'll do it for 5 years and see how it is. And then boom, I'm now in 11 years and still having a good time doing it.
Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live, drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure that more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Fox, true, they considered you for, and I know baseball has their own rules as they have gone to replay and dealt with some of the things you're talking about. Did they talk to you about doing baseball rule analyst work?
Yeah, they did. I mean, there was a couple of sports. When they took on golf, they asked me about golf, and I said, did you want to go to golf school? And because I do like to play golf. And I thought at first, yes, and then I thought, no. I don't want to know all the golf rules, because then I'm going to call all my friends on the things that they do. And then they'll be mad at me and I won't have any friends. So I said, no, I'll pass on golf.
By the way, is a mulligan illegal? I think.
My rule in golf is simply on the first tee is that you hit enough until you like it. You
okay. Know, there, you're my
four,
kind of golf.
I don't care. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
But then they brought up the idea of baseball, and I was a baseball player, never actually played football, as ironic as that is. But I played baseball at Santa Clara, and they said, do you want to get involved in this? Because baseball really didn't have anybody. And I thought about it, and I said, well, you know, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And they said, there's an umpire school, rule school you can go to. And I talked to some umpires, and I talked to the umpire department in Major League Baseball. And I said, okay, I think I'll do it. And then Joe Torre stepped in, rightfully so, and said, no, you won't.
Okay.
you know, which, and if you just think about it, and I probably should have thought about it even when I said, okay, I'll try it, is that, you know, a baseball umpire is not going to want a football referee sitting there talking about whether their calls are right or wrong or what the rule is. And that's absolutely right. And so in the end, I'm glad Joe Torre stepped in, because, you know, the season football wise with college and everything is enough. And to add baseball to it probably would have been a little bit too much, too much time.
I can't tell you how many times too, I'll leave it after a broadcast at an airport and I'll see somebody from an officiating crew, and they're, if we're on the same plane, they're all watching their game, you know, on their iPad or whatever, on their way home reviewing, but they'll always ask me, hey, what did Pereira say about this call? How did you, you know, you were once one of them and then you become this TV guy, and how often did you, and I must say on the air, you're very, people want your opinion. I mean, they want an explanation to help us understand more, but they also want to know, did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? Or what's your opinion of the call? Doesn't mean you're absolutely right, but that's what we're kind of looking for. And I think the viewers are, how often did you get and still get from the league or other referees that are active saying, hey, Mike, come on, give me a break here?
Well, I mean, I don't get it too much. I get it more from the league than I do from the officials.
Okay.
You know, I think the officials, the difference was with me going in and doing this is, A, I told them that I would be respectful, that I would never use terms like blown, horrible,
right,
you know, those types of the terms that are just piling on. You know, I would said I don't agree with the call, I don't like the call, that type, but not the verbiage which is just kind of pounding on them, and I think they appreciate that. But I think the thing they most appreciate is Even though their egos are as big as the state of Connecticut, and they hate to be told that they're wrong. I think they take it better from me because I've been there. I've done that. And I was on the field and I know how difficult it was and is. And so, I think it's easier for them. Now, that doesn't, you know, their ego kind of still gets, you know, shrunk a little bit if I don't agree with their call. But, you know, when it comes to, and I get this too, Chris, because I remember when I was on the field and stuff, and I remember even when I was in the department, it was hard to accept criticism from somebody that's never done what you're doing. You know, they're not going to criticize you as a broadcaster because they've never done it and they don't know how difficult. They have no idea how difficult it is.
Although we get a lot of that on social media,
social media is a different beast. But when it comes to anti-social media, but when it comes to the officials, they wouldn't do that. And I think for them to, for example, to have, you know, Troy say that's a horrible call and use that, and then for them to say, wow, easy for him when he's never done this before.
Right.
You know, the official would never say, oh, what a horrible throw on that interception. You know, so that's for me, it's a little bit easier to take. And Troy, by the way, has gotten a lot better now that I'm in his ear standing by him.
It's good that, well, that's, you know, as broadcasters, we go through, we have our seminar with the league and you and Dean Blandino helping us out. You send us videos. We try to learn and prepare and know the rules, but there are these unique circumstances. And thankfully, that's when we are confused and want clarity, we go, that's, we have you there, whether you're in our ear or you come on the broadcast, as we saw at that Atlanta Detroit game. And there, it seems like there's always between a clock and a runoff and time running out. There are always nuances that haven't happened before, scenarios that haven't been played through. So, and we see some coaches, are there some coaches, Mike, that you found through time that, I know refs have to be impartial, but they respect the coach a little more because that coach knows the rules a lot better than the game.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are certainly coaches that know the rules better, partly because, you know, a couple of them are on the competition committee. And so they're involved in the process of changing rules and those types of things. Jeff Fisher, for example, who was on the competition committee, probably knew the rules just about as good as anybody. And I do think that's the exposure of the committee. But, you know, I mean, it's just like before, we're sending videos out, at least I did, each week to the coaches and, you know, with plays and explaining rules, much like I do with you. And I think coaches are getting better, but they're still not going to understand the nuances of the game, like what happened at the end of our Detroit Atlanta game where the pass was ruled complete, the clock's running. And then the Detroit runs up Stafford to snap the ball and spike it, and he does. But then replay stops it, and everybody thought, well, the ball had been snapped, and why did Mike, the replay guy wait so long?
Yeah, I hate to interrupt you there, Mike, but having called that too, because it was a long pass play downfield, let's just say it was a clear catch, how much time do you give the team running downfield? Because the Lions weren't set. There were still some Falcon players running back.
Right.
And I mean, that clock could have run out. I almost think them stopping helped Detroit at least get in position to spike it and have one more play, at least settle in, where that clock probably should have run out.
Well, that's the determination. That's like that weird play that every replay guy says, please don't have this happen to me, where he has to make that decision. There's a play. And in that, there's a play that presents itself like that pass that was ruled complete, right, was near the ground. And so now the replay guy has to make a decision. And Detroit was out of timeouts.
Right.
Do I stop this and give Detroit another play if, in fact, the clock was going to run out without Detroit the option, having the time to get a snap up? I got to wait to see if they're going to get the snap off. And then once he realizes that they are, then he's got to stop it at the last second. Because obviously, if they're not going to get it off, if you did stop it, you'd give them an extra play, which they shouldn't have had. So it was a real difficult situation. And then people on social media, was replay got involved. Why wasn't there a 10-second runoff? Because, well, there wasn't a 10-second runoff because, A, there was no reversal on the play. And even if there was a reversal, it would be a reversible to a stopped clock and not a running clock. That's why these rules are so damn complicated, you know.
Well, that's why, that's why we have you. Well, let me sum up in this. Where do we, and I know I'm sure that you get asked this a lot, Mike, and it's a broad question, but as best you can nail it down, because we love football. America runs on football, and the officiating and the replays are part of now. They're part of our broadcast when we watch, whether you're a fan, a viewer, a broadcaster. Where do you see it going from here? I know where you'd like, I know you want it to slow down and keep it simple. You've made that clear. But what's the next layer of all this, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think the next layer is another official. And, you know, college has 8 officials on the field. NFL has 7. But I think that there really needs to be another official. But he needs to be somewhere other than on the field. I do think you could call him the sky judge, whatever. But an official that has the ability to look at video in a enclosed booth somewhere in the stadium and correct obvious errors that are made in certain situations.
I thought New York said New York could only do that.
No, this would have nothing to do with instant replay.
Oh, okay.
Nothing.
It
would be all those things that aren't covered by replay. So, oh my God, there's a face mask that they didn't see. Daylights. He sees it. He can just call down, not stop the game, call down to the referee and said you had a face mask on number 28 in the defense at the 32-yard line. Penalize this. Boom, go. Go back to the championship game in New Orleans a couple of years ago in the Rams game. Call down immediately and say you have pass interference at the 9-yard line. Put the ball down there. Make the announcement. Let's go. Correct things outside of instant replay. And I would say limit the number of categories that you can. Anything player safety, that's the number one league concern. So if it's a hit on a defenseless receiver that's a big one in the head or neck area and not called, can put it on. It's a big hit and they call it, but it's shoulder to shoulder. They can take it off. And then that big pass interference penalty, maybe in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, but real time corrections, not stopping them for. And the problem is everybody will say, well, that's weird. And that's going to be, well, yeah, it will be weird, but guess what? Everybody's gotten used to replay stoppages and they would get used to something like this too. So if you truly want to take a big step to try to make things better and not try to correct things or address things with band-aids, then, you know, to me, that's where I see it going to. And I think it actually should go to.
Good. All right. And briefly, I know Bill Belichick has pushed this, the college, to have the NFL similar to the way college officiating is done. Do you like that concept?
Of the
constant review. That's kind of what you were saying, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't want any more 3-minute stoppages. Okay. So I do not believe Bill Belichick has always said, just let us challenge everything. We don't want extra challenges, so it won't extend the game. Well, that's a fallacy because right now with coaches' challenges, there's only about 1.2 per game. Well, if you give them carte blanche to challenge anything, then they'll each use their 3. And you'll end up with 6 instead of 1.2. So it will really extend the game. So no, I don't. I like a lot of things that Bill Belichick says, but that's not one of them.
All right. Well, we always enjoy talking to you. It flew by, and we'll see you on a Saturday college game Sunday and talk to you again real soon. Always enjoy your time.
You got it.
All right. Mike Pereira with us on CMI, the Chris Myers interview. Thanks for tuning in. You take care.
Thanks for listening to CMI, the Chris Myers interview. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review, and spread the word. Get new episodes every Wednesday on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Now, there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room. Collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on the screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.